Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Janet Foster Show, the show where you get real talk you can act on. And I just want to thank everyone for listening. And just as a reminder, wherever you are, wherever you're listening, whether you're on the LA Metro, on your way home, or on your way somewhere else, or if you're in a restaurant or you're hanging out with friends right now, wherever you are listening here in California, please feel free to get social with me right now live on Facebook at Janet Foster and on Twitter and Instagram at Janet D. Foster, and that's D for Denise. And certainly for those of you who are listening nationwide, we definitely welcome you. I'd like to hear from folks that listen to us from all around the country and that you've been able to interact with us, and that it just seems to be this community and this show seems to keep growing. And just want to give a couple of quick mentions again to Millennials Week. Thanks so much for your help and just for a lot of the support that you give. And you helped out with a great survey, and the survey that you helped me out with actually is the reason for today's episode. And we'll just get right into it. But I want to just let everybody know, if you're listening at home and you've got children in your earshot, maybe small children or elementary school age children, although this is, although the subject is kind of heavy, we are talking about human trafficking. And if it's something that you might want to keep your children, you know, at bay for a while, you please feel free. And it's kind of my heads up, just to kind of let you know that we may talk, in a little detail, there may be, you know, that three-letter word that you might not want to have your children hear. I just want to give you a heads up. But for all the grown-ups and adults, how you're listening and where you're listening, this will be a great conversation. And my guest today is someone who has done extensive work, not only in the area of human trafficking, but she has a very impressive background to begin with in terms of her life and travel. And she has written, she's written three books. Harem Slave is one, and Prince Ibrahim's Favorite, and Voices from the Harem. And she's definitely an accomplished author. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to her about today, and why today's feature discussion is about human trafficking, is she's an activist. And you know, that's one of the things that we like to talk to everyday people who somehow find themselves into the role of an activist or into the role of an expert. You know, we variate. We've got people who are professional experts as well as people who fall into it. And my guest today, Nancy Hartwell, is one of those accomplished individuals that I'm excited to have a conversation with and have you interact. So if you've got questions, make sure you hit me up on social media right now. And Nancy Hartwell, are you on the line?
I am here, and I am delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You know, one thing, if you could, for our listening audience, you know, this show is primarily an audience made up of Gen Xers and millennials. So it's basically, I think the oldest right now, the oldest Gen Xer is 51. So 51 on down to 18 is our audience. And you know, one of the things that I'd like for you to share, because you have such an impressive background, you know, one of the things that I was so impressed is that I actually feel like such a slacker since I am a Gen Xer. You have exposure to over 20 languages.
I say on my website that I can get into trouble in at least 20 languages. I can probably get back out in 8 or 10.
Okay. But, you know, that is impressive because, and that really stood out to me. I mean, I, other than English, I do speak 3 additional languages, and that was just impressive. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I've got to get with the program. And, you know, thinking about the work that you're involved in and kind of what has become, I think, just based on what you've done, it's become your mission that those 20 languages have probably helped you quite a bit. And I want
to... Yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Because even if you just speak a few words of somebody else's language, it... you suddenly become not just a stranger, but a potential friend. And it helps break down barriers. And I talk to a lot of people from a lot of places, and it is indeed a real asset to be able to speak to somebody in their own language.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to get into... we're going to get into the subject, the feature subject that I want to talk to you about today. And just to kind of level set for our audience, could you share with us, how did you get involved with your work with human trafficking?
Okay, well, I kind of stumbled into it. A good friend of mine was trafficked.
What?
And they found her bicycle next to the road. This was a beautiful... tall, blonde German, and she just disappeared. And a few months later, we heard rumors that she had been sold to a sultan in Libya. And we had no reason not to believe the rumors because they made a lot of sense and explained an awful lot. And I thought, damn, that could have been me.
Yeah.
And, so I started collecting stories, and before long, the stories started showing real patterns, and I started collecting more and more and more stories, and once somebody learns that you're interested in this topic, you get bombarded.
Right.
And so finally, I had time to sit down and turn these stories into some books, and... I've been very gratified with the response. All 3 of them have been perennial bestsellers. And in fact, the flagship book in the trilogy, Harem Slave, at one point actually made it to number 7 in all fiction on Amazon, which is about 3 million titles.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really tickled that the word is getting out.
Yeah. Now, is something that you just mentioned when you were talking about your friend, you said patterns. There were patterns.
Yes.
Can you share with us what those patterns were that you saw and how you followed that?
Okay. Now, I'm talking now about the international sex slave trade.
Okay.
By the way, the human trafficking is the number 2 business in organized crime. It's surpassed only by drugs.
Yes. Uh-huh.
This is a multi-billion-dollar international industry. And if we make the mistake of thinking, human trafficking, slavery, didn't we deal with that like ages and ages ago? If we close our eyes to it, then we don't discuss the dangers with our kids, and as a result, we put them at risk. So that's why we still talk about it. It's so that you can protect your kids. Okay, the patterns. Traffickers will... Now, my friend Ursula, that was a crime of opportunity, and this does happen. But usually it's much more insidious than that. Usually, traffickers will place an ad on a website that they know that young girls like. We're talking 12 to 15-year-olds.
Okay.
They will offer an opportunity that sounds absolutely spectacular. A modeling job, a part in a movie, trying out for a hot new band.
Okay.
Something that, you know, what do 13-year-old girls do when they're in front of a mirror? You know, they pose,
right.
They dance, they sing.
Right.
And traffickers know this.
Right.
Okay. So they go to great lengths then to make sure that their office looks really convincing, especially if you're a 14-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Movie posters everywhere, movie magazines everywhere. When a girl comes in, he'll pretend to be on a phone call where he's casting the remake of a major film or anything to impress the kids and make them think that this is for real.
Right.
Okay. Then they'll ask a question. Now, it's a two-barreled question. And what the girl hears is the first part. She gets excited. But what he's really asking is the second part. And this is the question. Honey, do you have time for us to sit down and chat for a few minutes? Or is somebody waiting for you? Now, she's all excited because, oh, he's taking me seriously. He wants to talk to me. I'm actually going to get an interview.
Right.
What he's really asking is, have you come alone and unprotected?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if she says, oh, my father, the karate instructor, is downstairs waiting for me, the interview will be very brief, and she will not get the, quote, job, unquote. If she says, oh, no, that's okay, nobody's waiting, then he'll invite her to sit down. He'll put her at ease. Chat, 5-10 minutes. Make her think she's really got a shot at this.
Right.
Then he'll say, well, let me show you the studio. So she gets up and goes with him willingly, and the studio is probably a closet.
Right.
And he'll shove her in and lock the door. And he'll call a broker. By the way, the Russian organized crime is involved in this big time.
Wow.
So he'll call Boris or Arkady, and she becomes a statistic. That is the typical approach. It has happened again and again and again and again. We need to warn our kids, especially girls, about anything on the internet that looks too good to be true.
Yes.
There was a case just a couple of weeks ago in Virginia where a 13-year-old agreed to meet a guy that she had met on the internet, and he killed her.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. This was just a couple of weeks ago in Virginia. He was 18. Now, also, you never know who is lurking on the other end of those online games.
Exactly, yes.
It might be a 40-year-old and not another 11-year-old playing that game. And you need to warn your kids about this, too, because and ask them to tell you immediately if they start asking funny questions like, can you send me a picture of yourself with no clothes on?
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Some kids, I will say, and we've had guests before that have talked about how some kids are desensitized to a lot of that. There are some children that they don't think that's odd for somebody. And then there are some that are thinking that's kind of weird, or either they're from homes where their parents are monitoring their web surfing.
Social media.
Yes.
Right. Well, a good tip also, if parents do it with your kids instead of behind their backs. First of all, you don't want to set off World War III.
Mm-hmm.
And kids hate it when you're a policeman. But if you do it with them, you can point out pictures that never in a million years should have been posted on the internet or other postings that are full of red flags that a 12-year-old might just not pick up on.
Right.
And you can save their ego a little bit by saying, look, you have some really naive friends out there, so you need to warn them what the dangers are.
Exactly.
That way it's like, okay, you would know what the dangers are, but your naive friends wouldn't.
Exactly.
So that's one way of sparing their feelings just a little bit. They might be the naive friend, but if you couch it in those terms, they won't be quite so mad at you.
Yeah, you know, you brought up a point about the targeted age. It seems to be that they are looking for, particularly in the international rings, they seem to be looking for a young type. And also, too, I know domestically with prostitution rings, some of the same thing with some of these pimps. They look for young girls, whether on the web as well as runaways. One thing that I wanted to kind of talk to you about, since you started talking about the international ring, here in Southern California, just in the last year, there has been a heightened awareness campaign throughout Southern California, especially because, you know, It's been released by the U.S. State Department that there's this one town in Mexico, Tenancingo. It's the largest source of sex slaves to the U.S. And they've traced that this town. It's a very small town in Mexico, but this industry. It employs about 10,000 people in the town, and they just in the last year, there have been a lot of listeners are aware of this, that there have been police raids, and it seems to be a lot of inconsistency in terms of how they've been found out. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of talk to you about, just in some of your work, if you have any insight for people as to what they might observe if they somehow notice somebody that might be strange, in the sense of they could potentially come up on a victim. Because here in LA, police have said if you come in contact with someone that you know, if you can get them safely away and get them to the police or call the police, I think those instincts are there. But, there was one lady who she said there was this house that was at the end of her block that, it was a very quiet neighborhood. And this was going on, and a lot of people couldn't believe it. It was a middle class. It wasn't upper middle class, and it wasn't low. It was just right in the middle.
Right.
And it was well kept on the outside, and it actually they didn't see too much activity because a lot of the activity happened at night, and I think because people in that neighborhood worked. And so they didn't see people when they weren't supposed to. And I just wanted to know if you had any insight on anything like that.
Well, I mean, remember the recent case in, what was it, Cincinnati? With Ariel Castro, who kept three girls.
Yes.
Enslaved for more than 10 years.
Yeah, it was out of Cleveland, I think.
Right under people's noses.
Yes.
Okay, there are a couple things you should look for. Now, you should be observant, and if you can discreetly take pictures, that's also a good idea, but don't do any raids yourself. You're running up against some pretty hardened criminals here, and you don't want to put yourself and everybody around you in danger.
Right.
But take notes and be observant. Look for things like like plastic bags or aluminum foil on the new on the windows.
Huh.
If there's something like that on the windows or the curtains that are always closed, that's somebody who doesn't want people to look in.
Okay.
And that's somebody who's hiding something.
Okay.
Also, if you see locks on the outside, that's to keep people in, not to keep bad people out.
Right. Oh, okay. These are good. Locks on the outside.
Yeah. Now, also, if you see a prostitute, and they're pretty easy to spot, if they are inappropriately dressed for the weather, okay, you're in Southern California. It's nice most of the time. But if it's 50 degrees and she only has a sweater, you might want to ask her, honey, can I take you somewhere safe?
Okay.
Many of them would be scared to death to say yes, because they have been manipulated, lied to, deceived, betrayed so many times that even when you're genuinely trying to help them, they'll be scared to death of you.
Right.
But maybe you can, for instance, the Salvation Army has recently started helping victims of human trafficking, and that's one of the first places I would call.
Okay.
Every community has organizations that are involved in fighting human trafficking and also helping the victims once they've been rescued. And I don't know what all of them are in Southern California, but I'm trying to get together a list. And if your listeners could shoot me emails with the organizations locally that help girls like this, I would love to add them to my list. You can email me nancy@nancyhartwell.com and okay. I'll get it.
Okay. Hey, and we'll also, yeah. What we'll do is we'll also push this on my social media for our listeners of the show, and especially on Twitter. A lot of listeners are active on Twitter. So we'll definitely
okay.
do
Good.
That. And,
Good. And
get the
on
word
my,
out.
On my website, I also have some other resources that somebody might be able to call, also in several different languages, like Korean or Spanish hotlines that girls can call with complete discretion. And one pretty good technique is to put a sign in the inside the stalls of women's restrooms,
huh.
all up and down interstates and in public places with numbers to call. And now the pimp has probably confiscated her cell phone, but while she's there, she might be able to borrow a cell phone and call one of these hotlines. So that's another way that you can help.
You know, I have a question about that suggestion that you made. Are you aware of any other places that or any other states or any other countries that have telephone numbers like that? That's a great idea. And that's.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of these are national hotlines.
Okay, but they're in restrooms. And that's such a California thing for us to think about doing.
A very inexpensive way to combat it. I mean, put them on all the public restrooms, and it's one place that pimps usually don't go.
Right, exactly.
Right. And it can say, if you don't have a phone yourself, borrow one and call.
Right.
It's a very inexpensive approach. If you're being taken somewhere against your will, don't put up with it. We're here to help you. And by the way, runaways, you mentioned runaways, they are at extreme, extreme, extreme risk. Girls, if hell is at home and you plan to run away, please try to find some other solution. There are usually shelters where you can go, like Covenant House. mm-hmm. or Salvation Army. Call your pastor, somebody. But if you try to run away, a pimp can spot a runaway at 50 paces, and they will offer you help. They will offer you a shoulder to cry on for a couple of weeks, and then they'll move in for the kill. Well, darling, you know it's time you start showing me some gratitude.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
that gratitude turns out to be, you know, having commercial sex. With a quota of, depending on the market, $300, $500, $1,000 a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And if you don't satisfy that quota, you're going to be beaten to a pulp. Once a girl has been trafficked for prostitution in this country, her life expectancy immediately drops to 6 years.
Wow.
And the average age a girl is forced into prostitution here is 13. In other words, chances are she'll never see her 20th birthday.
13. Here in the United States, the average age
yes,
is 13. Wow.
13. Yes, yes.
Wow. Now, in your work, you have also noted that there have been college graduates caught up in trafficking
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, PhDs.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued about this, and you know how the level of manipulation that had to go into this.
Well, some of these turn out to be personal vendettas. Where, let's say a girl turns somebody down mm-hmm. and he gets mad. So then he'll go after her and arrange with a trafficker to kidnap her.
Wow.
Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
I'm still here.
So sometimes it's really targeted. And in the cases of the older women, I'm talking here now, somebody in her 20s,
right?
That's usually what explains it. Now, let me talk for a minute about the ages that are targeted.
Yes, please do.
Now, in addition to the almost bottomless market out there for pedophiles, the Middle East in particular is looking for very young girls. In Islamic law, puberty for a girl is 9.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay? Right. So many girls are married by the age of 9. They do not consider this pedophilia. This is considered prime time. So your 9 or 10-year-old who's been playing with Barbie is at risk. My sister had a friend who was visiting Morocco with an 8-year-old girl, a 5-year-old boy. It was, you know, a family vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl skipped off, you know, 3 or 4 meters ahead of them. Somebody grabbed her. That's the last they ever saw her.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And boys are also at risk to satisfy the market for pedophiles. And also in the Persian Gulf, be turned into eunuchs to guard harems and brothels.
Oh, my God.
Yes, eunuchs still exist. Yes.
Yeah. I was just floored.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, I
get out the smelling salt here.
Absolutely. It clicked for a second. She just said eunuch. I mean, literally,
yes,
it was clicking.
Yes. We're talking castration. Yes.
So that basically he wouldn't get into the quote unquote product.
Right.
My gosh. You know, with these kinds of harems, and we'll just move on into the Middle East. You've opened. I wanted to get to the Middle East. You know, because a lot of your work has been about harems.
That's my specialty.
The thing that baffles me about the whole harem thing is they can have multiple wives.
They can have up to 4 wives. Yes.
So why, you know, I guess, I just don't see, I don't understand how necessary this is, but there's a market.
You're not a guy.
That's true. That's true. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely
right. And there is no limit in Islamic law to the number of sex slaves that you can own. Now, they don't call them sex slaves usually. There's a Quranic code called those your right hand possesses. And that's code for a sex slave. And there's no limit to them. And some of these guys have hundreds of women in their slave harems. Hundreds. Sometimes the girls never even meet the man who owns them. Other times, you know, the other extreme, they'll wear them out in 6 months. And there are some brothels that are so brutal that life expectancy is calculated in weeks.
Oh, my gosh. Knowing
some of these are not pretty places, and they treat these girls like routine pieces of meat. And I mean that. They have no more relationship with them than they do with a beef roast in the refrigerator.
What I find that's fascinating in a bad way about these places is that, you know, countries like the Middle East, and I think even in parts of Africa, where like Burundi and countries like that, they have this mask of societal conservatism, but this goes on. And it's sort of an oxymoron in a sense of if they were a little bit more open, maybe this wouldn't be happening. In your work and in your activism, have you when you talk about the life expectancy, have there been rescues? Of people from these harems?
Occasionally, very rarely. We're talking 12-foot walls, armed guards. Mm-hmm. Arabs have been slaveholders for thousands of years, and they know how to keep them safe. Mm-hmm. Let me also point out that in countries where Sharia is the principal law, mm-hmm. slavery is still completely legal.
Yes.
And like in Saudi Arabia, King Faisal issued a decree in 1962 that officially outlawed slavery. But a man-made law can never supersede divine law, and therefore it just kind of sort of went one layer farther underground for a couple years, and then that was the end of that. It's practiced openly. In Qatar, where the World Cup is going to take place in 2022, mm-hmm. the facilities are being built by slave labor, and conditions are so horrific that they have been averaging a death a day.
A death a day in Qatar?
In Qatar, yes.
Wow.
Building the facilities for the World Cup. Most of these were our workers from India, Nepal, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Somalia, who were lured there by promises of fabulous jobs. Mm-hmm. And then they get there and their travel documents are confiscated and they're locked up and they work, 18 or 19 hour days and they can't run away. That's the way most of these people operate. They will actually send out recruiters to poor countries like the Philippines, like Indonesia, mm-hmm. and go to villages and say, some rich families on the Persian Gulf need housekeepers. Anybody here interested? We'll pay your transportation. There are fabulous benefits, good salary. Well, of course, people sign up.
Yes.
And then they get there and their travel documents are taken away. The contract that they signed is ripped up in front of their faces. I have a link on my website to a maid from the Philippines who was late serving coffee one morning in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. So they poured boiling water all over her.
Oh, my gosh.
You should see. I don't know how this picture got out because it's so damning. But I'm offering a five-day free course on human trafficking and modern-day slavery. Just go to my website, nancyhartwell.com, click on the e-course tab, and we'll send it to you.
And people will be able to take that?
Right. And there's a link to that picture in that course. You must see it. It is really graphic. I mean, second-degree burns all over her. Heaven help her if she had done something serious. I mean, this was late. Serving coffee.
You know what? One of the things that I wanted to ask you about it is here in Southern California, the closest thing to labor, slavery that has that people are aware of here. There are two aspects. First has been the seafood industry, because it's pretty typical here in Southern California and throughout California that people are very particular about the seafood that they buy. A lot of people don't want to be a part of creating a demand. We have a lot of people here in California who don't like to buy seafood that comes from the South, from Southeast Asia, because of a lot of slave labor.
Hallelujah.
And particularly last year, a story broke that the Associated Press actually discovered it. And it was a fisherman who was locked up in a cage, and he was speaking, for some reason, I can't remember the language, but it turned out that one of the cameramen in the camera crew spoke the language.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was an obscure language.
Again, the advantage of knowing another language is.
Exactly.
Yes.
And this was in California, this was huge because, and I'm sure in other parts of the country, but here in California, it was even larger because we actually have... We have a very active movement in reminding consumers about the goods that they consume and who they may hurt by what they buy. And and it was really big because several localized supermarket chains were tied to some of the suppliers that purchased from
Thailand, Malaysia, and Vietnam, in particular. Yes.
Yes, and that's
they will once again lure poor guys from especially Cambodia and Myanmar, and then they take away their travel documents, beat them up, threaten their families, the whole nine yards. And these guys are working like 20-hour days, and then at night they're locked in cages.
Exactly. And that's exactly how the Associated Press reported it was their reporter, I think he was a videographer or either a photographer. He was walking, and he just heard this voice of someone saying, help. Help me in this language, and he kept following the sound. But he was the only. I cannot remember the language, but it was obscure because when I heard it, and I thought, you know what, that was divine intervention, because because I think it wasn't even a language that's even written. So they were rescued. I mean, tons of fishermen.
Wow.
And I remember seeing the photo. And with me being a reporter, sometimes I see a lot of live feed. And when I saw it, I couldn't believe it. And here in California, we had a lot of major grocery chains that had to come forward.
Pull stuff from their shelves, and
verify. Because and people ask already, and then to uh-huh. um, And then it's just been heightened. And seafood, it's been a year, and it's definitely been pretty tricky. And I know.
Well, it's not just seafood, but also agricultural crops.
Yes.
I'm in Tampa, and California and Florida are the places where, you know, we grow fruits and vegetables and flowers.
Yes.
And they all get ripe at the same time. And so producers depend on contractors to supply temporary labor to be able to get them all picked and packed and everything within the short window that's available.
Yeah.
And a lot of these contractors are really unscrupulous. And they will have virtual slave-like conditions for these people, even if they have valid work visas for the U.S. If they have a valid temporary work visa, it means they can only work for the company that requested the visa.
Exactly.
Which means that they aren't out. If they quit, they're goners, and these companies know that, and they milk it to the max. So it's not just the seafood industry, but also the fresh fruit and vegetable industry, where slave or slave-like conditions are often discovered.
You brought up
Cesar Chavez, who fought against all this.
Yes, well, that was the point I was going to make. That's the second area that Californians are aware of because of here in California, and actually, that's kind of the. I think it's the game changer in the immigration argument, especially here in California, because when Cesar Chavez started the movement, basically a lot of farms decided to forego the workers and bring people over the border. And that started a lot of the problems that we have, but no one wants to admit that. And then, no one wants to admit that that's how this happened. And I know that's a conversation. Immigration is another conversation, but that's something that we're acutely aware of. We're also acutely aware of how because of those situations, whether people have visas to work, a lot of times, if they do leave another employer, they continue in some under the table kind of work, and they're either not paid for or they're abused by that.
Their contracts are altered. Their tax subs are, I mean, their pay subs are falsified. They know all the tricks. And the workers are intimidated. They're threatened with deportation. Their families back home are threatened.
Yes.
Often they have fences, dogs, armed guards. They're isolated from the community. They're moved around a lot so that they don't ever become familiar with the territory. They know all the tricks. These are professional exploiters, and they prey on the most vulnerable people. It's really, really an insidious crime.
It is. And, you know, you mentioned, too, that you're in Tampa, which is my old stomping grounds there. You know, Plant City, it's about strawberry time there.
And, it's the Strawberry Festival. Starts on the 3rd. Winter strawberry capital of the world. Yes.
Yeah.
Like them.
And definitely a lot of migrant workers, you know, there in Central Florida. And also from the Miami area, the Homestead area. And it seems like people move from there and then they move to South Carolina during the summertime.
Right.
And that's, you know, and sometimes.
Or to Louisiana for the sugar cane. I mean,
They move them around. There are some migrant workers that they do, as we say here in California, they do have papers. And then there are others that aren't. And that's where a lot of labor issues come into play. And I know here in California, we do have initiatives that are put in place to limit that kind of exploitation. And also, we do have very active purchasing. But one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about as it relates to your experience with human trafficking is, you know, we have all of these issues going on, whether it's through sex trafficking, drug trafficking with mules coming into the country or leaving the country, and then we've got labor trafficking. What in your circles of discussions and even in your training, what kinds of solutions have been coming up to this? Because this just seems to keep growing and growing and growing, as if it has a head, or that it's a monster that we can't seem to keep up with.
Right. With multiple arms, you cut off one arm and it grows.
And it grows
more,
back,
right.
And it gets stronger, you know?
Well, I think we need a nationwide solution. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of communities now that are very active in policing, protecting, raiding. But all the traffickers do is move to the next town.
Right.
And unless we can really blanket the country with active pursuit of this problem, they just move to the next town. I recently wrote a blog about massage parlors
that
often hide other activities.
Right.
And they can shut down and move in like an hour and a half.
Yeah, and depending on where, because here in California, it's pretty strict on that, how you open them, you can open them.
Most places, they're pretty strict. But they fill out all the papers and make it look like a perfectly legitimate operation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have specialists, especially in the Chinese community,
mm-hmm.
who will go around and show you how to fill out the papers to make it look like a completely legitimate operation. And they will go to great lengths to make the massage parlor blend in to the, you know, the coffee shop and the shoe store next door.
Right.
And then they use word of mouth to advertise their extra services.
Right.
And then as soon as the authorities start to get wind of the operation, boom, they move. By the way, in Columbus, Ohio, they were having such an issue with massage parlors. Would you believe Columbus, Ohio?
You know what? I could, because it's a quiet place, and
right,
they wouldn't
okay.
have that issue. They would just think, I'm just going up here to get a massage.
To get a hot stone therapy or, you know, a targeted point treatment or something. I mean, you know, they have brochures that list all of these mm-hmm. these legitimate services. They even have people who are specialized in giving fake massage therapy diplomas. Now when the Columbus Police Department raids a massage parlor, they take a Mandarin interpreter / victims' rights advocate with them.
Uh-huh.
Because the women who were working in these parlors were afraid to death that the policemen were there to arrest them and not help them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, because here in the States, it's usually the pimps and the johns get off, and it's usually the women who are victimized.
Right. I mean, this typical scenario, a girl is brutalized at home to the point that she's just not going to take it anymore. So she runs away. A pimp finds her, brutalizes her even more. Then society victimizes her again by treating her like a common criminal.
Exactly.
Hello.
Yeah.
There is only one state in the country that gets an A rating from Polaris, which is a nationwide organization, by the way, that tries to help combat human trafficking.
Okay.
And they rate each state as far as its legal environment is concerned. Most states get C's or D's.
And what state gets the A?
The only state that gets an A is Tennessee.
What?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. And
you should go onto the Polaris website and see what California gets. I'm not sure. I just moved down here from Maryland, and Maryland went from a D minus to a C minus. Wow.
Oh, wow. But Tennessee got an A.
An A.
I wonder
an A.
How.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
Because is this an international thing, or is it based on domestic?
No, it's based on their laws and their programs.
Laws and programs basically dealing
to prevent and how they deal with a victim of slave of human trafficking once she or he has been rescued.
Is it domestic or international or both?
No, that's domestic. That's domestic.
Oh, yeah. I'm impressed, because I was thinking where I was going was if it were international, I would understand it, especially if they had someone who spoke Mandarin Chinese. Not too many people are doing that in Tennessee.
Right.
But that's sort of why I was going at is international or domestic. And,
uh-huh.
Well, good for Tennessee. You know what?
We
started getting listeners in Tennessee. Good for them. Good for you. With all what's going on, snaps to Tennessee for that.
Yeah, I was impressed too.
Yeah, no, that, and you know what? We'll have to look at that for California, because we think that we're good about those things. But, you know, just kind of as a wrap up, if you kind of previewed some things, if people want to get more information and they want to connect with you, we're going to put out on our social media how they can give you information if they know about local initiatives. Now, you talked about your course.
I would love for your listeners to help me collect a really good list of organizations all across the country that are involved in this activity.
I will get them on it. I'll tell them about it. Now, your books, Harem Slave, Prince Ibrahim's Favorite, Voices from the Harem. Where can listeners, if they want to get your books, where can they get your books?
Amazon.com.
Oh, excellent.
And by the way, Harem Slave is now also available in Spanish and in French.
Excellent.
On Amazon.com. German is coming soon.
Oh, great. Now, if you could, Harem Slave, if you could quickly give us a premise, a breakdown of that book.
Okay. Well, this is a book based on true stories that I've collected over many years. It's about a girl from Maryland. She's just graduated from high school, and she's on a high school graduation trip to France. She's visiting some family friends near Marseille. And while she's visiting the Arab Quarter in Marseille to buy some souvenirs, she is lured into a dressing room and is kidnapped. She was going to try on a pretty dress, and she's kidnapped in the dressing room. And to her utter astonishment, she is sold to an 81-year-old sheikh, and anyway, she ends up spending more than 5 years as a sex slave.
Ooh.
She's moved around a good bit.
Okay.
She's eventually rescued, but that is an ending that normally doesn't happen like this. It was a novel, so I could manipulate the ending.
Okay. Well,
I fell in love with her and didn't want anything.
You didn't want anything bad to happen. Well, everybody has to get the book. We're out of time right now, but Nancy Hartwell, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll definitely have to have you back. And to our listeners, I want to thank you so much for listening. And when you can't hear this show, make sure to check in with us a couple of days later. We'll have the podcast available. And thanks to Jeremy for all you do to help make this thing go. And until next time, we'll see you the next time.